This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
We will be good to go. Yes, I brought with me Michael Murray, our science teacher, Liz Faber, our athletic director and fifth grade teacher, and you guys know me. Tonight, we are going to visit with you about the points that were given to us for talking, specifically on 28 to 24 and how that would impact our school. We're going to focus on those areas that were asked for, and that is graduation requirements that we currently have, the expectations that we have for our freshmen for credit. Are they reaching that point for their credit? PE requirements, along with the additional, is it going to be a benefit or a drawback to our school? We did put a couple extra slides in at the very end, and that's information that we'll make sure is available to you once we're done with this presentation, but it gives you some thoughts that as a board you could consider for your future, because if we make a decision of moving from 28 to 24, there are other things that you may have to consider. Okay? All right. So, Mr. Murray, you get to kick us off.
Thank you for having us. This is my first time to be at a meeting here, and I'm glad for the opportunity. I'm Michael Murray. This is my 26th year teaching high school science, my fifth year at KC. Before that, I was in Oklahoma for many, many years. So what we'd like to talk about today, first, the path that we have our students on so that they can achieve the credit requirements. So we do require 28 credits, and as you can see, in the past 4 years, we have not had any student that has failed to graduate due to a credit deficiency. So we do very well in that regard. In the past 4 years, all ninth grade students have started out well and have not failed a class and have all achieved their goal. Many of the students graduate with 32 or more credits. So they're not there just doing the minimum, they are going above and beyond. Most of our students are motivated, and a lot of that comes from the parents. It's really key in having parents that are encouraging the kids to come and participate in classes, even beyond what's required, and that's great. So they're doing classes with us, they're doing online classes where they're getting college credit at the same time. So we're doing great with that. A lot of the classes they do, if they want to get to the top level of Hathaway, they are guided in a direction where they do have to have 4 credits of English, 4 of math, of science, 3 of social studies, and then plus our 2 PE classes that are required by the district. So there is a defined path for them if they want to be successful in achieving that scholarship. Okay. So for early graduation, we have one early graduate this year. He is going to the military. We typically have a student that will do this option every other year. The last one I know of was going to attend college, and she needed to go to start that semester in mid-year. The reasons that this could happen vary. Sometimes it's for a career opportunity, so they'll graduate early. Maybe military service, as is the case this year, or that they are accepted to college. Early graduation for us is restricted due to the limited staff that we have and the number of opportunities they have to do the English classes. That is one of our biggest requirements.
Okay. I'm Liz Faber. I know a lot of you have been here a couple of times, but I'm glad to be here tonight. This is my 14th year of teaching in the fifth grade, my fourth year in KC, and my third year as the athletic director. But I do love KC, so I'm glad to be here to represent them. Some other things that we have going on for us in KC is the early release that we offer to students. So this is really only offered to our seniors who are definitely already on track to graduate. We don't require them to take that time off, so they don't all always choose that, but a good percentage of them do. So typically 80% or better of our students will take this option for that early release, and they'll do a work release, or they just take that extra time for themselves, which they tend to look forward to. I know my son loved his personal time. Typically our seniors have maxed out their elective offerings at that point when they do choose this. So we don't get to offer quite as many electives as BHS or the other schools, but we do offer as many as we can. So when they've maxed them out, they choose to take that early release, which is good. So we did want to talk a little bit about PE requirements. Right now we have one PE teacher that teaches K-12 classes, which is a little bit of a struggle, but we have got that figured out, and I think it runs really smooth. But within that, we have to offer two classes for the high school, which is the 9th and 10th grade per the district requirements currently. If that changed, that would give us a little bit of flexibility, was our thought in adding that in there. So all students that are in 9th and 10th grade have to take that PE. We do offer an elective PE, which is a lifetime fitness. So even if our credits requirement went down, some of those kids that like to take the PE class would still be able to take that lifetime fitness as an elective, which is a flexibility that we offer or will offer.
Can I ask her a quick question?
Maybe.
So when you talk about the two PE credits and there's some flexibility, that means you could still offer something through PE, just a different name, right?
Yep.
Correct? Is that what you're saying when you do that? So it's still going to be an option for kids to do something, what you're talking about, like life skills or maybe something in the weight room.
But not have to take a ninth. Or maybe they take their ninth, but not have to take 10th grade PE.
And health is incorporated into one of those already, correct?
Ninth grade, I believe health is incorporated into ninth grade. Yeah.
So it's not going to impact anything other than giving you some opportunity to be creative.
It would give us, it would give us more flexibility if we were to go from 28 to 24 credits. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does to me. I'm just making sure I'm
okay. Okay. So benefits of... for us, or that we can see from going from 28 to 24 credits, there would be fewer credits for the freshmen to earn, which would be a lot less taxing on their anxiety as they come in as freshmen, which could be a good thing. It allows for scheduling options to be opened up. Currently, we have a group of teachers that's going to go down and observe Little Snake and see what their scheduling options are, because they have some flexibility to offer the same amount. So I think that we have a great group of teachers that's already looking into options on how we can make this work for us. The district could also choose to put expectations on students for future career and success planning, so we could put them in the right path and keep them going strong. Let's see. In the junior and senior year, students could have options for job shadows and internships. And this last year we had another one, our same PLC, that took kids to do some job shadowing and some intern, they looked at internship options, and man, our kids were so excited about that. So to be able to have that flexibility in our schedule would be really awesome, I think, for our kids as well. Those are kind of just our benefits that we looked at. Of course, that'll depend on what the district requires again.
So then the drawbacks, the elephant in the room is, unless we put emphasis on elective programming priorities, we could see a loss of programs. And in a small school like our school, that is a loss of a complete program. It could be that, okay? But it's all based upon, A, how we schedule, how we build that schedule, and B, the priorities that the board puts forward. The next thing is there are going to be fewer elective exploration opportunities. We already know that. If we go from 28 to 24, we are cutting 4 credits that would be considered elective credits out of the requirement process for kids. Okay? There could be more partial programming. So yes, we could end up with a woods program and a ag program, but we would probably end up with a half of one of those programs just based on numbers. We would not be able to fill those programs completely because kids will be required to take required courses. And then it could reduce ADM. The reason why that is put in there is because sometimes electives are what draw kids into the building. They dabble their toes into that, and then sometimes they join full-time. I will address right there that ADM in our school currently has not been hit heavily with a withdrawal to going to homeschool or other alternatives, but we did see a pretty good drop over some years that we're going to visit in a minute, okay? But those are our drawbacks. So let's get right into that ADM discussion and some history. You'll see up there that in 2008-2009, we had 25 teachers, 147 students, and 22 classified teachers, classified staff, sorry. And in that, we had one full-time tech person and one full-time maintenance person that was down there at that building. We jump ahead to 2013-14, we dropped three students, but we dropped two teachers. And we dropped nine classified staff members. We lost three kids. We jumped to 2019-2020, and we're at 118 kids. We still are at 23 teachers. We dropped it, and we still are at 13 staff members. 2024-25, the board had asked through an attrition process, and I sat in this room here about 4 years ago, and we went through having early retirement or retirement incentive, and we did not fill back some positions. And we went from 23 teachers to 21. We have 112 students, and we have 13 classified staff members. So as you can see, our numbers took the hit a while ago. We have stabilized, and I would hope that when we talk about ADM and how it impacts funding and stuff like that, I'd hope that the board recognize that we have taken the gut.
Casey's already got it.
Okay, so that's just what I would like to point out here. So moving to the next slide, where do we go? You know, we can look at problems that we have here and always think about the bad parts of it and not look for some solutions. And what I'm presenting and giving to you right now is some thoughts. The first thing is, guys, you need to follow the data. How are the schools doing? Okay? And what are the good schools doing? What are the good schools in the region doing? Okay? And figure out why completely. It could be schedule, it could be credits, it could be a mixture. It could be the way teaching instruction is done. That is stuff that we need to look at. The next thing is, let's look forward to some new opportunities. And in that link there, that's showing our students at our school. By the way, we went and did a college visit for all 7th through 11th grade, 12th grade students. We visited college as well as the police academy today. Okay, so there's opportunities for us to open our eyes and say, maybe we should look at educating our kids for their future, not just getting them graduated. And I believe right behind me on the board is one of our new goals, and that's about that, not just getting them graduated. And the last one there is envision what we want students to have for success. And that's talking about career internships, some job shadowing, some other thoughts that we are already working on in this district with three other school districts that I'm a part of. And I guess the last thing I'd like to leave it with is, when we come out of this, we need to make our trademark. Because just like every one of you guys have been told, and you know, we are now not in a closed market. We're in a free market. And the only reason that kids are going to come through our doors is because they want to be there. So, questions?
I'm not going to do a question. I want you to dive a little bit more into that work that you and were doing with those three, if you don't mind, if you're going to.
Okay, so if you click on Envision.
So I want to say Jake and several people, there's six teachers, correct, have been doing this work with you, Jake, with these. And this is about that vision. It's about creating a new vision.
So this is a collaboration between three other school district superintendents, myself, and a couple of their job, they have what's called the career success coordinators. And so we're looking at trying to make expectations between the four districts to be similar for internships, processes in which we can get kids in job shadows. What does that look like? When we talk schedules, if we were to free up and open up some periods and time like that, we could make it to where kids could do internships in a larger region. Okay? So that's one of the pieces here. Another piece that's up here is talking a little bit about embedment. So if you scroll to the bottom, the latest talking points that we're going to be addressing, and it's because of Chapter 31 changes that are coming when we talk about graduation requirements, is there a chance for embedded credits? So there are ways that as schools we can look at how to educate kids and do it differently. So this is some great work. Along with it, we've got business and industry involved as well as Sheridan College. And this is a K through 16th grade approach that we're taking. So we're trying to make things seamless for transitions all along.
K through what?
K through 16.
It's a pathway.
So it's a pathway for kiddos that if they want to end up at a four-year university, we are funneling them the right way to make that happen.
Okay.
So to help you with as a board, why I have Jake take on, Steve's helping, and we have six others is because really it started with Perkins. Okay, as a Perkins coordinator, we started talking about how we leverage some different funds, who's your Perkins person, who knows that pathways. So we started with Jake with that. So it's really, if you were at the last meeting, when we were at the last meeting, there's more excitement about this. The State Board of Education, and it's talking a profile of the graduate and some different things. It's kind of, honestly, I just talked with Diana Clapp the other day, and it's kind of hit a roadblock again, and they're starting to discuss what they're going to do with the rules because there's been a lot of pushback on how they're going to implement it, and more importantly, how are the assessments going to take place so there's consistency. But this work that this group is doing is funded by Whitney, it's funded by the governor's office, and if there's a potential to change the rules at the state level for us to do different things, I think it's going to come through this work. So that's what's more exciting about it, is actually changing the rules so we can have some flexibility with what we're doing. So that's exciting work. However, it's slow work, but it's exciting work.
So help me understand, if the Sheridan districts we looked at when we were doing some of this research are on 24 credit systems, does that help you get into this more effectively or hurt you at it? If we match theirs.
If we match their credits, it would help things be... when we talk blocking out time and kids' schedules to make things happen like that for internships and stuff, it would benefit us. If we stand alone, that would be a more of a challenge. We can still play in the pool, I guess, but we wouldn't be completely getting wet.
Yeah, that's synchronized. Okay, thank you. Other questions? Go.
Yeah. When they do these interns, they get credits for those, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I just got a question. What's the reasoning to visit the Little Snake River School?
Great question. So they do credits way funny down there. I phoned them up and asked. I said, so how many credits does your school? Because we've used them before in how we developed our schedule a while ago. And they said 50 credits. I'm like, so they go to school for 8 years? You start offering credits in sixth grade? No. Sorry. It's actually 50 credits divided by 2, so technically it's 25. I'm like, well, all right. So 25 credits. Great. So how do you offer everything? And they do things a little different. They have a kind of a modified block schedule where cores meet every day. And I think it's a 5 or 6 period block. And electives meet every other day. So you'll have an elective on block A block, let's say, and A blocks are on Monday and Wednesday. And you will have a different elective on B block, which is Tuesday and Thursday, but it's the same time frame. So you're getting 2 electives in that same time frame, but... your core would meet every day. So that's something that we're looking at, and we're toying with that idea. Understand, what's important is when you look at schedules, you just don't go grab a schedule and say, that's what we're going to do. Because just because it might work in Powell doesn't mean it works in Buffalo. Just because it works in Bags doesn't mean it's going to work for us in KC. So, and we have to look at the staffing, what we have for staffing, and then figure out where the problems are and the holes are.
One question. Do they block the cores, or are the cores not blocked?
Or cores are not blocked. They're okay. Every day. They meet every day.
Yeah, I mean, they're every day, but are they blocked every day, or just it's a regular class period?
Like regular class period.
50 minutes, okay.
Not 50. It's 100.
It's a hybrid block.
Hybrid block, so it's not quite full 90 minutes. We're looking at like 70.
So it's still kind of
blocked. 75.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
And just on interesting facts, Jake was telling me his staff and him were excited to go, so I talked with Mike Hamill, who's the superintendent there. Why 50 credits? And he goes, I didn't want to touch that with a 50-foot pole when I got here, because that's just the tradition, right? Mm-hmm. But what they did is they come back to not only are they doing some things, but he's excited to announce that every school is going to qualify to be a PLC school, and which will qualify them to be a PLC district. So they've been on this journey for quite a while. So it'll be curious for Jake and his crew to see what that looks like when they go there too, as far as PLCs and how they do that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Interesting. Are Rollins and Bags on the same credits?
Same district.
Yep.
So they had the same credits. Are they on the same same schedule? Or they got
no different schedule.
No, same credits, different schedules.
So Rollins is with the same. Mm-hmm.
So hey, do you know if they're 24 or 28?
25.
So they're 25.
Okay.
Rollins High School.
And so is Bats.
Yes.
How many electives do you offer total?
Oh, you had to ask that, is it? Well, shame on you, Chris. That is a tough, tough question. I
count quick.
You're making me count real quick. Well, when we talk elective teachers, okay, we have a full-time woods and a full-time ag, okay, and we have one credit, one class offered that's a business class. So right there, that's 12, 13 classes. And then we have music, which is we try to open up three blocks there. So we're looking at 13, 16, and then we have two PE. And we sit in Lifetime Fitness. Let me get that right. So you're looking at 18. And that's in-class instruction. Now, that is elective teachers. We're not talking about the Mr. Murrays of the world who offer anatomy, environmental chemistry. Those are elective classes as well.
Yeah, we definitely get creative with our teachers.
Yes.
Well, and I know, because as a parent, it usually doesn't feel like there's a lot of electives, but I think, I'm guessing that's because of the whole schedule. You've got second hour open, so in second hour, there's really only this and
this. A couple offered,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I missed the art program, too.
Art's huge.
Don't tell Mr. Sight. So that's another six, so we're looking at close to 20, 24.
I'm assuming you have. I'm so overwhelmed. Dual enrollment, all that is.
Yes.
That's additionally.
Yes.
So there's still significant numbers of elective options, though.
Yes, they can take a lot of online courses. I'm going to tell you right now, though. I don't know. Please don't hold this against me, but I believe that the best place for our students is in front of teachers.
Yeah.
And I don't appreciate online classes as much.
I get it, but I have kids that I might not have been able to keep in the building if they didn't have some of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like a double-edged.
That's my feeling.
Yep.
But just wanted you guys to be aware of that.
It's nice to be able to offer them, but we would prefer
be
with the teacher.
A lot more college online than there are in person.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again, Judy.
There's a lot more college classes that are online than in person. My daughter has taken a lot of online because they aren't there in person.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one thing I like about Student West. You know, they're in front of the teacher.
All right, gang. We good to go here? All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
So, Gib, you are up.
Yes, please, VHS.
sooner.
I think. I'm not sure, but I think.
I'll say.
Well, good evening. For new board members, I'm Gib Ostheimer. I'm the principal of Buffalo High School. With me tonight, Kasan Madsen, who is our 9-10 counselor, Michelle Dahlberg, who does mostly juniors and seniors, and over there, Mr. Chris Cox, who is, he has a difficult role. He is halftime science teacher and halftime assistant principal of Buffalo High School. So you've been, thank you, Casey, you've been presented with a lot of information here tonight. One of the things that I felt would be most valuable to you was to provide you with some time to ask questions. So I'll give you some brief history of what's going on, how we've come to where we are. And then some of these topics really come right out of the office of our counseling department. When we talk about graduation credits, when we talk about early graduation requirements and opportunities, when we talk about release periods, those things, they're done with me, but they're done directly through the guidance office. So these are the experts on that stuff to speak about it. So we started this, I don't know, research project, if you will, a couple of years ago. And we had a committee from Buffalo High School that included teachers and staff. That committee was joined by two of your board members, Marcia and Casey joined us, as did when he was available, Superintendent Oski. So that the first year, we did some research, we did some looking, we really investigated what we were offering. How do we improve Buffalo High School? One of the things that we say every morning is, how are we going to get better today, right? That's our job. In that second year, as we closed the first year, the board members came on. We started looking at where could we go. Mitch Kraft came on board and did some reporting, actually about 6 months before that, give us some guidance on high-performing schools in the area that were similar to us. So we took a road trip, and we went out and we went across the mountain, and we had two different groups going to two different places the first day. We had a group that went to Powell and we had a group that went to Thermopolis. The next morning we met in Worland and did Worland together and came home. One of the things that we all understand better after that experience is that everybody cuts the day a little bit differently, right? You can slice that pie any way you want to. What's important is that we have 1,000 hours of instructional time during the school year. That's what we're required to do. And everybody's required to do that. So we took a look at, we built some mock schedules. We've been talking at Buffalo High School about this stuff for a couple of years, with the understanding that this was that we were piloting, or I don't know, investigating this as a district initiative, if you will, right? Which is why there are board members participating. So that's been the process. We sharpened pencils. We have been visiting with our staff. We've been looking at the constraints that are potential here coming down the road in the next, in the near future, and how do we best meet the needs of kids under those constraints. So, all of that. Currently, we offer an opportunity for 32 credits at Buffalo High School, 4 times 8. Graduation, the minimum requirement is 28. We have a lot of kids that earn more than 32 credits. We have plenty of kids who earn more than 28. The opportunity for things like early graduation is present. Ms. Dahlberg does a great job with those students in
and asking them questions, and she'll talk to you about this, asking them questions about what does their future hold and why do you want to leave us and all of those things. You met, I think, all but one of those students in the last month. And so you heard their story, I think, and what their future holds. PE requirements, as you know, district currently is at 2.0. So I went to my PE guys and I said, what do you think would be the best meet the needs of Buffalo High School students if we're going from 28 to a minimum of 24? And we've had, I don't know, three or four conversations over a number of weeks. And they came back to me and they said, well, in the end, here's what we'd like to do. Y'all know Jay Camino. And one of the things that Jay Camino loves is the impact that he has the opportunity to have on incoming freshmen. So he said, I would like to keep my freshmen for the year, do a one credit PE and health, which is the way they do it now. And then we add on a half a credit as a requirement that students can take anywhere between their 10th grade year and their 12th grade year. They actually believe that that structure reducing from 2.0 to 1.5 will actually increase the number of students they see. They think they can generate more interest in PE under a structure like that because they can offer things that they currently can't. Things like maybe an outdoor rec course, a lifetime fitness course. We currently offer strength and conditioning for athletes. We also offer strength and conditioning for our female students. Well, they would like to do like a lifetime strength and conditioning, right? So they look at the potential opportunity and they see growth. I mean, they said, well, I don't know if the 1.5 of us is going to be enough. But that's the opportunity that we have, right? And for us at Buffalo High School, that's the way we look at a problem, is just how are we going to make this better?
Because, so, not to interrupt, but you also told me that they also would like to incorporate the work we're doing this year, correct?
They do. Thank you, Charles. Jay has been working closely with Trevor Reagan on the growth mindset stuff. For the last, beginning last year, last August, Jay Camino and Brent Gross began to incorporate Trevor Reagan's teachings and the growth mindset philosophy and teachings into both of their courses with freshmen. And this year, with the opportunity that we have working with Trevor, that's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. So Jay could see an elective class that is about physical education and growth mindset sort of combined. So he's thinking both of them are. Okay, so let's talk, Michelle, if you would, just about early graduation.
Mm-hmm. You know, with our early graduation students, they're usually kiddos that I touch base with as juniors. They start telling me that they're interested in that, and I make sure that they've got their career pathways planned. That the reason they want to graduate early is not to sit at their parents' house and play games all day. I've been so proud of our last two classes. They've been so intentional. But our five that are graduating in December, the two that are going to college, one's already enrolled at MSUB, goes up on the 14th. We'll have all of her classes selected. She's into the nursing program. The other student is going to Sheridan College and continuing with the dual enrollment classes and the concurrent enrollment classes they've taken at BHS. A little guy that's going to do his apprenticeship as a plumber, going strong. He's feeling really good about his pathway. It's pretty exciting to think how BHS has helped those students grow and have this skill set, and they're ready to go. They're kiddos. Every one of them has had a life that's made them be a little bit more independent and responsible in their family, and some of it's been financial, some of it's been just being accountable for themselves, and they're pretty mature kids. They're ready to go do some great stuff. Our one kiddo that is actually a junior, now she's a senior, but that's graduating in May, she had just kind of an interesting path, but academics have been huge and headed to Montana Tech and is going to go into engineering. And right now has maxed out our math program and is currently taking Calculus 2 and is taking Calculus 3 next semester. So, I mean, the kiddos that are graduating early, we just don't throw that out there for everybody. It's a very intentional process with those kids that we are checking in with those students, making sure that they really do have some academic goals. And every one of them, I feel really good about what they're hoping to achieve and they're wanting to do. Anything else on that? Questions from you guys?
Yep.
Do you guys offer? Do you guys have offer the early release as well?
Yes, we do have the early release period right now. We have every class. It's about 50% of the class does take the early release, and you know when you think about our students taking 31 out of 32 credits, it's pretty awesome. And you know, you guys know, young adults, they're excited to be seniors. And we have supported those students to have that early release. It's nothing we offer to any underclassmen. They have to be in good academic standing. They have to be ready for that. Of those 40 kids that have early release, they actually have it linked to their Working Smart period. And so we have our Working Smart internship and our Working Smart mentorship. So students that are already employed and they're working, like we've got two girls that are already working as CNAs. They got their CNA certification as juniors through the dual enrollment program, and they're both working at Amy Holt. One of them gets up in the morning, and she's at work by 6 o'clock, and she's got her release period and her mentorship period, and she's working about 30 hours a week. The other one does hers at the end of the day, and so she is... 7th period is her mentorship, and then 8th period is her release, and she works until about 7 o'clock at night. So the kiddos that are using that release, some of them it is for getting themselves regrouped for practice, or they don't come to school until 8:45, but some of those students have really maximized that release period to add on to the mentorship piece, where they're maximizing that Working Smart opportunity.
And just so that our Working Smart internship and mentorship opportunity, just so you know, we had 22 kids involved in that a year ago. We have 40 something this year. 4 years ago, I think there were like 2. So it's grown tremendously. It's a passion of Andrew Borgelli. And if you know Andrew, that thing will continue to grow. Yeah.
It started as our OJT program, mm-hmm. and when Andrew came on board, he rolled those two programs together, so our on-the-job training kiddos have rolled into that. And so right now, with kids that are actually employed getting money, we have 13 of those students that are doing that. And then our mentorship program, where they're actually out in the community, and we have surgical, vet tech, elementary ed, psychology, physical therapy, management, golf course management for our student who really wants to go into that. We've got nursing and we've got a plumber. So we have students out in the community that are working, and you know, and Andrew and I just work with these kiddos, and they've got these interests, and we figure out how to get them in places where they can go and they can have some real life work experience and the opportunity to see where their school, what they're doing at BHS, is connecting to those different opportunities in our community.
But you're not counting those as release periods, are you?
They're not release periods.
No, they're not.
We're making sure those are on the schedule.
Why
are those? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
good.
But that's what I was saying. Like, they get one period to do that, but a lot of these students are tying their release period. 16 of them have linked it to their release period, so they're actually double time.
I see.
And so first and second period, first period is their release, because releases can only be first or eighth, right? Because we know...
Yeah.
School, they're, once they're with us, they're our responsibility. So once they get to BHS, they're ours. And once they leave, then they're not. And so those Working Smart periods are tied to the release periods. And it's pretty impressive what our kiddos are doing. Mm-hmm. Our little gal that's working with a vet tech, same thing. She's up. She's working at 7:30 in the morning, and it's her release period. And then she has her Working Smart period, and she's getting to observe surgeries and pet care and health care. You know, it's pretty awesome.
So with that then, so there's the release period and it's tied to that, but they don't get any credit
for release
it's
period.
Considered release, even
right.
though they technically are,
right.
That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, they're maximizing the time they have at those, in those opportunities.
They want to be on those locations where they can truly get more experience.
So what would a 7-period day do to all this?
Yeah.
You guys have said that before. It's going to cause choices. Mm-hmm. It's going to make students have to make choices. When we talked about before, remember with the Hathaway, it's 17. With our graduation requirements and our Hathaway requirements, that's 17 credits. And as we talked to you before, we want every student to be Hathaway qualified. We just don't want them to shut any doors. And our junior colleges are really expanding their programs to not just be associate's degrees. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, the program in Sheridan has gotten into the whole welding and construction management. So it's not an associate's degree. They're getting into the trades. Riverton just added cosmetology. Casper has all the automotive, from automotive engine repair to body repair. So we want to make sure that every one of our kiddos have the opportunity to qualify for that money. Our current senior boys, I've got like five of them that want to go to Casper and they want to go into fire science. And, you know, it's great. And so we don't want them to shut any doors. So Kasan does such a great job talking to those freshmen and sophomores about you're growing your academics, right? So then when you get to your junior and senior year, we're thinking about getting as much Hathaway dollars as they can possibly qualify for. So when you're thinking about 17 of those credits being Hathaway, and, you know, and we have 28, they've got 11 choices to make. If we cut it down to 24, then they're going to have 7 to make. And so that's where kids are going to have to make choices. But it is going to affect, you know, whether it's the mentorship program, the Working Smart program, it's going to affect dual and concurrent enrollment, if it's going to affect their CTE sequencing. Travis and Charles visited us at the high school, and I wish I should have made a copy for all this. I didn't quite know how this would go. But every one of our, you think about our 8 elective pathways. We have 8 different elective from art, ag, business, computer science, woods, Spanish, music, instrumental, music, vocal. 8 pathways. And the teachers have built 4-year sequences for those kids. And they've built the opportunity for those kids to work through a sequence for 4 years. And so when students are choosing their different pathways, we find if they don't take something as a freshman, it's really hard to get them to take it when they're older because they're like, I don't want to be with a bunch of freshmen. So Kasan really tries to get them like, hey, if this one isn't fitting, let's try something at semester and try this different pathway so that we can find places where the students can feel successful.
Other questions, other thoughts, board?
I think they need to add a little more and talk about the journey that they've changed since we started this process. So when you went to Powell and when you went to Thermopolis, you came back and you took things that were going to impact kids in a positive way, right?
Yep.
So you guys have already started some of the journey. I mean, let's talk about it. You just haven't been a stick in the mud. You're always continuing to reevaluate. You're coming back. You're incorporating some new things. So that's a question. I think there's some more you can tell.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yep, absolutely. And much of this you'll see both in the board, my board report this month, and in the school improvement plan. So coming, if we just look at simply the last couple of years, which includes this process of looking at some other schools, we have done a tremendous amount of stuff. So, you know, I think right now we use our math sequencing used to be algebra one, geometry, trigonometry, and then algebra two, right? So the math folks, as they came back from that, had a conversation in their collaborative team, and they have changed their sequencing. So now we have algebra one, we have algebra two before they get to geometry. And they did that so because we have some kids that come out of the, there's two areas where we don't get all freshmen in the same place. And those two areas are math and science. So this way, our math students are, they actually get more consistent instruction, and our sequencing is a little bit different. Earlier than that, we brought in the geometry and construction class. So we have some students who, you know, we learn just math is not their thing. And so following algebra, they move into geometry and construction, which is a 2-hour block. So We've done that. We have added an intensive tutor hour. I don't know what else to call it. So, you know, through the through YTOP, through conversation and with middle school teachers, through assessment work, we evaluate incoming students, and if every indication is that they may struggle, we reach out Kasan. Kasan reaches out to all of those parents and says, here's our concerns, here's what the data shows, here's an opportunity we want to present you and your child. We did that some years ago with algebra, and so we offer a math lab for ninth graders. The first, we did that 2 years ago was the first time, and same kind of process in identifying kids and reaching out to those parents. What we found out in that first semester is that every student whose parents said, yep, I think they need that, every single student passed semester one, algebra one. Of the parents who declined our offer, none of those students passed. It was 100% pass or fail based on that. It was super nice data to have, right? I mean, we know we got good at identifying, and then we got good at intervening. Interventions come to mind. So we've had this advisory in our schedule. It's a 20-minute block. We tied it to a class period so that we eliminated one passing period throughout the day. Kids weren't going, for example, from second period to advisory, then to third period. They were going from second period to advisory, which was third period. So they'd spend the first 20 minutes in advisory and then just roll right into class, not have to move. So this year we started out the first 3 weeks of the semester. We had math on Mondays. So math intervention by invitation of a math teacher so that the math teacher knows who's coming and knows what they need, right? So we did that for 3 weeks. Following 3 weeks we did, is it Science Tuesdays? I lose track. Science Tuesdays. Thank you, Mr. Cox. So we rolled out Science Tuesdays. So now students have an opportunity in math on Mondays. Then they have an opportunity in science on Tuesdays. We now have completed our first round, if you will. And so we've got math, science, English, and social studies are now, they each have their priority day. Priority day. That doesn't mean that a math teacher can't get a student on a Wednesday, but they don't have priority on Wednesday. Wednesday is English is the priority. So if the English teacher and the math teacher both want the same student, priority goes to English. So we now have that intervention throughout Buffalo High School, and we're going to like run this thing and see how it goes. There's a lot of moving parts to this stuff. Our next goal, maybe as early as right after Thanksgiving, is to then start to build an enrichment opportunity for every student who doesn't have to go to an intervention place, right? So maybe they don't have ceramics in their schedule this year. Maybe they could sign up for a 3-week mini ceramics unit and go throw pots for 3 weeks because they just can't get it in otherwise. So we have an opportunity to build a lot of opportunity, I believe, into our schedule and for our kids. We also, as you know, took an idea, tweaked it a bit, and we now offer what we call seconds at lunch. That came from the research that we did looking at higher performing schools. So teachers have one specific code that they can identify an assignment is missing. Every morning those assignments are pulled. So we identify which students have those coded assignments. An email goes out to parents, an email goes out to students saying, hey, you're missing an assignment, you're going to be in seconds for lunch today. And we gather them up, and away they go. And one of the things that I think, and Kasan probably can speak to this a little better, one of the things I think that we're definitely seeing is we don't have students that are buried with 25 and 30 missing assignments, which we've historically had. And when you find a freshman who's got 25 or 30 missing assignments, there's not a lot of hope in that equation, right? And now we don't really see that.
I would speak to that in that I do feel like last year I spent a lot of time having conversations with students to come in because we did offer time to support students. Teachers are there before school. Teachers are there at lunch. And then we had core issues after school where we had certain days for each department. But so there was a lot of support, but a lot of people, a lot of students were like, yeah, I'm not doing that. You know, it's after school. I want to go home. But who can blame a kid, you know? And so we are finding that I see students, they're coming at lunch, and they're getting that missing work done. So when I look at a student's power school, it's not this list of so many missing assignments that there might be a few. And some students really don't like to go to seconds. But we do have some students who really do like to go to seconds because then they don't have to do it after school and they're getting support. I know it may feel like a consequence, hey, you can't leave campus at lunch and you have to be here, but it is helping students be more successful and they're getting the help that they need. The teachers who are in the classrooms, often students know what they need to do and they get in and they get to business. But also the teachers in the classroom, I think, are really good at paying attention to, like, you know what, this isn't a case that this student just didn't do this assignment. It's a case that they're not really understanding that assignment. And so they call up to Beth Bowden in biology and said, you know, I have a student who needs support, and they connect that student to the teacher. So they're getting, I think it's a little bit of problem solving on when a student needs support and helping them with that connection.
And that was one of the driving factors, actually, for getting this started is we know the evidence says, right, because you have it, that a student didn't do some work. But why didn't the student do the work, right? Did they not do the work because they just didn't want to do the work? Or did they not do the work because they don't know how to do the work? And we have to separate that out with our kids. And so one of the things that we quickly learned, Mr. Cox and I essentially see every kid every day at lunch at seconds. And one of the questions that we ask is, do you know what to do? And now kids are like, oh, yeah, I know what to do. No problem. Do you know how to do that? And when the student says, yeah, I'm not really sure, now we have an academic intervention that needs to happen. It's not about the behavior of not turning in work. It's about the ability to turn in work. And so let's close a gap there. And so that's what Kasana is referring to. We're reaching out to teachers, and they want their kids. And so it's been pretty good.
It definitely has. I feel like we've had to tweak it. It's a lot of manpower and a lot of moving parts all at once. But I think teachers also appreciate that they have a time when they can pull students and help support them in completing the work that they needed some more help completing.
Awesome. It sounds like the PLC model that everybody's been training and working in, you're making this fly.
We're working
really cool.
Charles.
I think another thing that we need to celebrate is when we walked into Powell, we walked into a gentleman, I didn't realize he's a graduation coach. Thought he was security, but he wasn't, super positive, let you into the building, all that kind of stuff. When you go up there and Kasana, Michelle, or Gia, or Chris are greeting kids coming in, that's similar to a graduation coach, right? Making sure, grabbing the kids, what are you doing, how are you doing? So those are some of the things we talked about, is how exciting is when somebody meets kids at the front door, and are we doing that? I mean, that's something I think everybody needs to be aware of too, is if you know their personality, they probably have more energy than some of us do in the morning, so maybe you need to go up and get a little energized. But those are some things that they bring to the table too that I think we noticed too. It was a cultural piece. Not schedule, it's about attitude, it's about what are we doing and how are we greeting kids. And I think if I'm correct, you kind of took the parent liaison version of calling every freshman, mm-hmm. correct?
Mm-hmm.
Which is similar to what, you know, we're doing. So I think those are some of the things that I think just everybody needs to hear. You're also, those changes that are coming with what you're doing.
This last year, what I decided to do when we were welcoming the eighth graders in before school, went out, because it's a lot of information kids get. So before school, school was out. It was those few days that I was still working. I called every parent then just to see if they had any questions about the process, you know, and I let them know when we were going to have our freshman orientation. And I'm in the process now that we've made it through quarter. I'm calling all freshman parents as well just to check in. So
I'm going to ask about the 24 credits. How would all of this, because this is great stuff that's happening up there, and I love to hear about it. How will all of this change if we would change to 24 credits?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Jody. So this 20-minute advisory piece that we're currently, so really what we run is a 9-period day. So understand that, right? Right now we run 8 academic periods and then a 20-minute advisory. There's 9. What we would do is we would essentially run an 8-period day because one of our periods would not be a 20-minute advisory. It would be a period dedicated to intervention and enrichment. I see it as expanding that opportunity for our kids. That's what I see. It provides us with maybe a 35 or a 40 minute period, so twice as much time to both enrich kids, provide them, and I'm still working on this in my head, but I see these little 3-week mini units where kids can go and do when they don't need intervention time. It actually for that aspect, it would grow that time. Our seconds program, I expect, is going to stay where it is.
Too good, working too good to not.
Time will tell. We're 10, 11 weeks into that, and Chris and I, he's great with the data, and we go back and forth on the data. So that piece, I think, is fantastic, right? And remember, we have 1,000 hours, and we're going to slice it the way we want to. And as Michelle said, it's going to tighten the elective opportunities for kids. Our schedule is built by student choice. That's the way the high school schedule is built, right? So they have their required classes. After that, it's built by student choice. It'll be built by student choice then, just like it's built by student choice now. One of the biggest impacts that we're seeing, and we've talked about, but I need to make sure you're aware of, is our struggle with coverage and subs. Right now, our teachers have 2 preps, right? And so we're buying one of those preps all the time. So I am concerned about just the ability to cover classes. We are looking this month. Ellie and I sat down, and Chris had a similar conversation with Ellie. We already know as we look through the month that we have too many people out and not enough people to cover. So we're going to probably look at having to combine some classes, some class periods, right? So we may take an English 9 and put them with another English 9 class because there just aren't the adult bodies. And we're using everybody we can use. We just are. So that for me is a concern, right? When we go to one prep and teachers need that time, we're going to have to really, really work at generating interest in being a sub at Johnson County School District.
Do you think there would be a benefit or it would be helpful if the district explored something where you had 1-2 full-time subs that were full-time employees with benefits, the works, and every day they will sub full time. They will work for the district every day of the week.
I'm not sure. I mean, we were talking about our sub pool, if you will, people who are consistently coming to Buffalo High School, and there is like 2. But the problem is, you know, we'll have 8 people out. And I think the district's done a good job looking at those high-impact days. But we still have other high-impact days, right? We just do.
And not to take away from that, but every building's going through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
We're combining elementary classes. We're combining,
Yeah, it's not a Buffalo High School issue.
Subs are a shortage.
Every district is
collecting
the same.
Yeah, I don't mean it's a BHS issue. Just telling you our story.
That's going to be dope.
Yeah.
Kristen, to answer that question, it has been thought about before, but if you hire 3 people, then who gets them? Mm-hmm. And how do you flex that? And then who do you hire? They have to be specific for high school or specific, because some of them, we have some elementary subs that won't sub at high school.
For sure.
And we have high school subs that say, I can't keep up with kindergartners, so there's absolutely no way I'll do that.
You know, I will say, though, we at our last in-service, we have always had a problem having our own teachers, Buffalo High School teachers, cover in the shops when our shop guys are gone. Always been an issue. Essentially, when Leif or Ryan is out of the building, work stops. Kids are like sitting in the commons or they're going to the library. It just shuts the shop down. So at our last in-service, we did lunch in the shop and we took the whole staff into the shop. We fed them lunch. Mr. Rivera in the Woodside, he walked them through. No, actually, he was gone. Mr. Leppard walked teachers through the basics of running a wood shop and what kids do and all of that. The same thing happened in the metal side of the building. And we have teachers that are just going, sign me up. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable. I'll go out there. It's been a tremendous difference. Miss Blaney, her second favorite place to be is fifth period in the metal shop watching the kids work.
Funny, Mrs. Hatlin was saying that about Woods today.
Because Lane promised he wasn't going to put them on the torches. So.
Yes, there's some off-limit stuff, but you go out there right now, and Miss Blaney is in the shop, and the kids are building and creating. They're working. So that's been a really good thing. So just a positive there.
I think the positive I got here, too, is they also emphasized this is an opportunity for those kids that are struggling in the core classes for them to shine and to allow them to shine. So I'm assuming some of those kids they talked about are shining because they are leading and showing what they know because this is the environment that they thrive in.
Yeah.
And so it was exciting for the teachers to talk about, hey, let these kids show you what they really enjoy doing. And just in his vocational teacher, I'm sure they're taking pride in what they're doing and they're making it happen too. So
yeah, it's been really great. Kids are working and our teachers aren't in the building.
And I appreciate you sharing that piece of it because I think like something that is being questioned a lot with the, you know, shrinking our graduation credits and the elimination of electives and things that just really, I guess for me and my perspective, not just as a board trustee, but as a parent, that's a place where you're really putting the time in to think outside the box, to still provide those elective opportunities in a way that's creative, mm-hmm. using your staff within the building that maybe wouldn't be doing that on a regular. And so those kids aren't sitting in the lunchroom,
right.
They're not sitting in the library, mm-hmm. they're still getting to do the things and do the work. And I appreciate that because I think that's a big fear right now with everyone sitting on the outside hearing, mm-hmm. like, we've got to make up, so we've got to live within our means. And so thank you for putting that out there because I think it's not heard that there is semantics going on the inside, that you are trying to look at what's in the best interest of our students and still offer opportunities within the means we have at our fingertips. So,
Charles asked the question about, you know, when we went on our school field trip. I think I could not walk away without saying this because I just have so much pride in our high school and I love what we do for our kids. You know, so while we were there they were sharing their stuff with us, we were sharing just BHS is amazing. And these things that we've had the opportunity to add and to just make ourselves better is our goal, and we're just very, I think the four of us are super like competitive, and we want our kids to be at the best and our kids to excel, and we want them to thrive. I mean, that's why Kasana and I were so excited that we got to be a part of building that mission for our district, and we want every single one of our students to thrive and have a place and have a future plan. And when we went to Powell and Worland, those are the two that I got to go to. I mean, they were asking me questions just as much like, you do that, and how do you do this? And because our career and technical stuff that we do with our kids is phenomenal. I hate to say this, so sorry. But, you know, we get this little thing, and until Gibb was our principal, our school never talked about our school report card. We never talked about our school report card. We had never seen this. And this year, when we got back yellow, I seriously almost wanted to cry because we had worked so hard and we were 0.2 away from being green. And Gib has them up on his board. And, you know, we keep that focus. Like, we want to grow and we want to do things. And we have one area, okay, this little blue box is our CTE stuff. And this the stuff we're doing with our kids and their certifications and their pathways, the things these kiddos are doing with their Working Smart and taking out in the community. And it's just, it's phenomenal. And I know it all goes together. Our core teachers, Cammie and I talk all the time about our FBLA kids. If you guys ever went to an FBLA conference, you'd be like, holy crap. We place in every single event, and it's the math, and it's the English, and it's the science, and the speaking skills. And we just dominate that stuff because it is a total reflection of Buffalo High School when we get to travel with those kids. And last year we had 62 kids go, and 58 of them qualified for nationals. Thank God they all didn't want to go. But it's incredible. Like, we spread those kids out, and we find their strengths, and we capitalize on that, you know. And so when we go to other schools and we have the opportunity to talk, we do so many great things for kids. We really do. And so I don't want you to leave the impression like, oh, we went there and we had to change all these things. Yeah. It was like, well, we're going to steal that and that's going to make us even better. Watch out. And we're going to take this piece and our kids are going to be even better because we do phenomenal with our students. We really do. And another thing that is going to help too, part of this whole thing is what Jake was talking about, that him taking over the CTE stuff. And I guess hear about our PSR, our post-secondary ready report. Like, every kid has career, college, or military ready. And we set that as our goal to make sure every kid is on a good path.
Tony, you had something?
Oh, it was about subs, and we've already moved past it. So.
Okay.
I do have a question. Thank you. I actually have a couple of things that I want to talk about. So with Jody asking the question about what the actual direct effect is, so within that 11 credit choice electives that you offer that will drop down to the, am I right, drop down to the 7 credit choices, elective choices. Okay, so I have that straight.
Correct.
Within those choices, there's obviously, you have established criteria for what specific electives can hold, as far as like student numbers, consecutive semesters held. And Gib, you totally excited me when you said, I haven't quite wrapped my brain around it yet, but how to be able to offer those certain things and maybe it being a 3-week course rather than like, kind of like how Dr. Hansen talked about it being, you know, we get to this ultimate goal of, you know, credit doesn't necessarily mean, but this is how we get to that goal. So that to me, like if those conversations are happening and those thoughts are being brought up, like that excites me because I feel like possibly there could be the ability to continue to offer lots of things. I try not to look at it as like we're taking things away because not a one of us in anything, we don't, that's not what we're here for. We are here to offer everything. And so that, I had my question, and you answered it, but you didn't know you answered it, and I like that. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate for just a second, and we talk about, like, Clear Creek gets kids ready for Buffalo High School, and then have we ever, and I'm just going to, and this is going to include Dr. Hansen, have we ever had a student that was enrolled in New West, this, obviously without the freshman, have we ever had a student that has left New West and said, I want to go back to Buffalo High School? And has that happened of how the credit difference between BHS and New West, what was the effect and the impact on the actual student? Have we had that happen? Or have we thought about that? Because it's a possibility. I'm not saying that it could, but it's a possibility.
We have had it happen.
And then how did that work?
So I guess I'd let the BHS staff speak to, since they had that person's four people, I can't remember if it's been one or two, but a limited number had them second, how that worked, credit-wise, or whatever.
And I'm just looking at, like, you know, I'm just looking at that that difference. Mm-hmm. And so, like, and we don't want to impact that kid as much as we can.
So,
but they say, like, my junior, okay, let's just say my they're freshmen and they're my junior year, and I want to go back to BHS. And how does that
work? So, I mean, if we look at the future, okay,
mm-hmm.
And New West stays at 20 and we're at 24, mm-hmm. right? And a freshman leaves CCMS, goes to New West, earns 6 credits first year, 6 credits the second year, says, okay, I'm a junior, I want to go to Buffalo High School, I have 12 credits, right? Well, they need 24 with us, which means that they can do it, but they can't fail anything.
It's going to be the work
they're
on the kid.
Have to nail.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, and actually when we transfer kids between high schools,
yeah.
it's mm-hmm. actually a percentage, right? So
and
we just had a kid
that I didn't
here.
Really think about because
yep.
not all high schools require the same
right.
number.
So we just had a student
so
move
actually,
from Gillette. So
okay.
they have 28 required credits. And
uh-huh.
so when he comes over, let's say we'll make it 14. So he has 50% of the credits required. When they come into us, they have 50% of the credits required. Like we transfer them because... Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if they require 24 and we require 28, say they had their 12, so when they come to us, it works out in the percentage. So like a class might be worth like 1.18, like just depending on that ratio. So a student transferring back and forth between schools, it's like the even percentage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So when we have kiddos leave us and they go to other schools, they're like ahead.
Yeah.
Because we've got that extra.
That's why I wanted to. Take it the other way. My other question. Oh, we just said that. You're going to have to come back to me.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had a student who, and I may get the story wrong, and Michelle will correct me, was with us for a year, left to a home school or virtual school, then to New West, and then wanted to come back, and credit-wise, we couldn't take that kid.
We could not take that kid
at that point.
Couldn't recover enough credits in time to graduate.
No, the math isn't there in that case.
Okay. All right, anything else for Buffalo High School?
I don't know if this is a thing or not. Do you have kiddos that struggle to get the 28 where they also may not... Basically, kids that kind of fall through the cracks where maybe they aren't on an IEP, but they're struggling a bit more, where 24 will significantly help them?
So I would tell you that our freshman core teachers would tell you that fewer credits helps our freshmen. If they were, for example, if they're juggling 8 now, if they were only to have to juggle 7, freshmen would benefit. Do we have kids who struggle. But we catch them every. Those grade reports are run every week. These guys are on it. They visit with the teachers every week. Teachers are on it.
We have team meetings every other week.
And it's a. We're not missing anybody.
Well, and I think, too, it's important for you guys to realize, too, that, you know, like Mike and I today, I got one senior boy, and
mm-hmm.
he's trying my patience. He's got 2 core classes he's got to pass, and he's got 40% in the class. You know, so Mike and I are just talking about what if for this kid. We're all Johnson County.
Yes.
We're Johnson County, and we work together, you know, and it's a kid here and there, but our goal is to make sure that no kid slips through Johnson County's cracks,
right?
We want to make sure that this kiddo has the opportunity to graduate. He's already got his whole career path figured out. We just got to
get him to graduate.
So, you know, Mike and I, we had a good conversation today, making a plan of what we can do to help this kid. What if tomorrow he's meeting with Gib and I? So, I mean, our goal is to not let him get away from us.
And we've taken a lot of time.
Yes, we didn't need it Charles' time a bit, but he was pushing the question. I just figured it was okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we really did put a little bit of time down there, but district leadership.
All right, so this is a question and answer for us. I've asked Craig to be here tonight for special ed. Steve is also here also as we go through this. So just to summarize where we're at, this is the journey that we've been on since I got here in 2021, all right? And so as we go through that, and we're here to make a recommendation, right? And it's merely a recommendation on my part through the work that we've done or the expectations of the boards over since I came. But being transparent, COVID, that first year was probably a majority of the focus rather than the expectations of the board. So I would like to go through a few things unless you have specific questions about where we're here tonight.
Okay.
So I'm just going to start with this. When I got this job, it was the most exciting job because this is where I wanted to be, because this is the Johnson County School District number one. Okay, this is where we were. But undoubtedly, I'm not going to tell you, I walked into some things that everything, if you go through the history of what we did with federal audits and accountability and all that kind of stuff and how do we get where we need to be, I'm not going to go into that point. But this journey from that very first week started with the discussion of Buffalo master schedule and 40 week, all right? That's where some of, that's where Mitch Kraft came into play. That's where the focus was at VHS, all right? I didn't go back and look at why there was a history, but I did the last couple days as we go through this process. In that process, as we go through this, when we started looking at schedules and started visiting, and I'll give VHS, they were part of it, and we were going there. We've had discussions as a district admin team, but the focus had been to high school. But to make that change meant we had to change district policy, okay? And as I told you as a board of trustees, if we're gonna do this, all right, we've gotta look at district policy, which is the overall graduation credits, okay? But part of that feedback was, well, from entities or stakeholders, as we met with BHS and some others, is if we're gonna do it, then we need to look at everybody, all right? We need to look at all policies and be fair across the board. So that's what you see in there, is just looking at policies. If you make a recommendation on Monday to move forward with 24 credits, then we gotta come back and revisit policies, because we're not automatically changing policies, because that process needs to have input from everybody as we move forward. But it was an interesting journey in looking at some historical stuff as we move through. So prior to getting here, you know, and knowing what is the background and why are we doing what we are doing, there's several things. And it's a commitment. This has to be a commitment from the district, from myself. This is about making sure JCSD number one is sustainable and all entities have to be on board. This isn't just individual schools, this is also maintenance. Everybody across the board with what we're doing has to be a part of this journey as we look at this, because it is real what's happening. Those of you that read chapter one in the book that we were doing, that was spot on to what we have to do. The world has changed. And as we move forward, you can either look at it as an exciting opportunity, or we can look at it as we want to continue to do it the way we've always done it. But if we continue to do the things we've always done, I'm going to tell you as a superintendent, I'm going to fight tooth and nail to make sure we stay above water, but we've got to start thinking differently on how we look at things and what. And your number one objective to me is you wanted to know what high-performing, consistent districts that have to follow under the same rules in the state of Wyoming do. And that's what I did. All right, and we brought that. We worked with BHS, and now we're to that point. That's where we're at. However, let's go back. The background. Budget and staffing measures, which are real right now, in February 21, this was prior to me being on, there was a significant budget challenge that was presented to the board based in projected reductions in funding, because that's when the sky was falling. Okay. Retirement incentives, health insurance, activity funding, national board certification, tuition reimbursement, paid leave. There's a whole list of things you as a board of trustees were looking to cut in that period in time in 2021. But then as you said, COVID hit, right? And what did COVID bring? COVID, that's when the money was flowing in, and that's where we used COVID to kind of stabilize our funds. So historically, this is something that had already been moving up. And if you notice the ADM where we said, it had come to that point already in 2019, you were having that discussion, all right? In that, you actually started as a district in 2018 identifying it. You had an early retirement incentive, there was some money to do that, and in 2021, there's an early retirement incentive that was given out, but almost 80% of those teachers came back, all right, in what that process looks like. So we've been maintaining kind of some of that staff. However, what's some interesting stuff is the master calendar has been revisited, not only under my here, it has been revisited in 2014-15, and it was revisited in 19-20, because looking at some of the documents is because there were concerns about the five-day week and how much kids were missing school or an activity. So I'm assuming that's why I walked into, well, why aren't we doing a four-day week? We thought that's what it was, right, as we go through that. Then I got into the next thing, and somebody presented me with some information she dug up in some slideshows. So in March of 21, there was a proposal made to implement a new schedule at BHS, okay? And the two options that came out of that were a seven-period schedule or a trimester. That's what was presented to you in the March of 21. I'm not even here yet. Don't even know what's going on. Maybe I'm doing the interview, the process, or whatever. So now I kind of connected the dots. That's why the focus is, what is a seven-period? What are other districts doing as we go through that? Obviously, it didn't pass. It was 8-1. So this is not the first time, as a district, you've looked at the BHS master schedule. So as we go through that, then when I came in the 21, we set expectations to look at consistently high and what other districts are doing and to be there. So we started that journey. You know that story as we go through that. But the interesting part of that is, just let me read it. I got the slideshow right here in front of me. So some of the things that come out, I want to remind you. My expectation since I've been here is, first of all, we wanted every kid to be in every core class every day. That was a big concern because they were missing classes, so we've done that. And then our focus has been on interventions or remediation or doing something for the advanced kids, putting some things into place, and then not going away from two prep periods, but keeping the two prep periods, but one as a PLC because we're a district, because that was pretty straightforward that most of these districts are PLC districts. So that's all a part of where that is. So as we go through this, there was a presentation that went through this. Current considered recommendations to you as a board was the current 8-period day, a 7-period day, an accelerated block, an alternative block, or the trimester. Okay, kind of the same parameters. As a team, they narrowed it down to two choices presented to you as a board. Your two options were a 7-period day and a trimester schedule. The 7-period day would be an easier change based on the current schedule. All right, so that was that. You went through all the pros and cons, 7-period day, easy transition, contract time. Students would lose an elective, which we're talking about, it's a choice. So these are some of the very same conversations that were had in March of 21 as we move through. But I don't know, as I look through this, when we came to the comparison current classes, which kind of confused me when I was looking at it. We have our 8 classes, but it said credits earned are 16 per year. So if that was the case, that would be 16, 32, 64 credits. So at that point in time, maybe you as a district were looking at doing what the one district that has 50 credits, I don't know. Maybe it's a misprint that said the 7-period day was supposed to be 14 per year and the trimester was 15 per year. So if that was the case, that's 60 credits that you were looking at back in 2021 to offer kids or opportunities of credits and what that graduation looks like. But ultimately, I guess, not knowing the conversations, either three of these schedules were at that time had to change graduation policy. Okay, I guarantee you that just because we were offering this, you would as a board had to have changed graduation policy. So we are just basically 3 years further down the road of coming back to the same conversation that was had, is what can we do differently, all right? How can we do it? And now we're reflecting on policy. And that's all I'm trying to bring to the table today, is everybody consistently across the table is, what do we do with some of those things? And I will pass this back out because it's a historical document, it's not confidential, so we'll send it back out. It was apparent in the public. But I guess the story I want to tell is, in 3 years, we're still in a different place. Even though we started looking as a district, back in 2019 and staffing and funding, the only thing that's changed is that supplemental funding that's coming back, because our ADM has still continued to decline. All right? As you see that, if we continue to do things the same way we did financially, all right, and with where we are, and our board policy limits the flexibility to allow our schools to do some innovative things. We're going to have to give rails because we just can't do everything. We talk about choice, but I also got to come back to maybe cutting programs. But what about the school district across the mountain that couldn't hire a teacher, so they had to cut the program because they couldn't hire the teacher because they couldn't bring the funds? That's what I have to look at too. We are almost $5,000 less when we're starting to look at recruiting and retaining, all right? So this isn't about me as a superintendent wanting to say this. I've got to be able to say we've got to be not only competitive with the JCSD number one, but I've got to be competitive in bringing people in, because the world we live in now is you might have three teachers, high-end teachers, that we're going out and competing for when we have open positions. What does that look like if we have a core teacher that we can't replace? Okay. I know we talk about elected teachers. Well, let's talk about our amazing ag teacher that we were able to bring in. He didn't even finish college. He had to finish his college while he was teaching, plus finishing his military. I mean, those are things that we have been able to flex through some things and keep people in front of kids. But a bigger challenge is yet is as we have that 20% that are looking to retire and move on, is how do we recruit people to fill those positions? Because in some cases, we're not going to be able to fill them. There were probably over 12 music positions around the state of Wyoming that didn't get filled. And those were some high-paying districts. We were fortunate enough to bring them in and get some people here. But I'm telling you, those schools went without music programs, all right? So sometimes it's about where we're at and what we're doing. And, you know, the number keeps coming up. And so through our amazing new software program, which we finally got everything in play, if we were to take the current scenario that we're in right now, and I was just to automatically wave the wand and everybody was super excited and I said, hey, tomorrow we're going to raise our base to $51,000. We're going to increase the classified salary base and we're going to increase professional development to be kind of competitive, that would be a $1.9 million addition to the budget. 1.9. That's just a matter of getting it to 51,000. That means I would have to come to you and say 86% of our budget is now salaries and benefits. That means we would be operating on 14% to keep all of our buildings and our square footage up, okay? Those are the numbers. When we ask, what does a 7-period day or a 24 credit, I gotta come back to say, all it does is give a bare minimum. Anything that we can do because we have the finances, we can do always do more. But the policy limits some of the things that we can do. I also have a complete responsibility to make sure that I am looking at every school. If you looked at my staffing initiative, in there it took Casey out and it took New West out because they're funded differently, they have different programs, there's a different environment with what it looks like. But I can speak to the elementaries because I've heard it. Said, why did you raise our class sizes to 1 to 18 to get our staff members or 1 to 20? We're making the cuts. How come nobody else has happened to make the cuts? Okay, so I have a responsibility to look at everybody and say, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it together. We're going to do it as a community. I can also say as a superintendent, I walked into a $1.3 million deficit on my first year. I walked to an activity budget that was 200% over the model. I walked into a $500,000 deficit in insurance, and I can't believe where we're at today. We're not even close to being out of the hole, but at least we can see the end of the hole, right? But it still doesn't take away, where am I going to be in 3 years as a district? We can either do it gradually, and we can start doing it, because I can tell you this recommendation, I won't be coming to you as a board or to the staff and saying, we're going to be $51,000 because we did a 24 credit. I just went out and looked at key points from those districts and said, what is the difference? Don't want to copycat them, because I truly believe JCSD number one is better than them. And if we're not, we better be, right? It's not just to be average, we want to be better. But what are the things that they have as a district that doesn't restrain them from making the decisions? How come they have been able to make the changes over time to get their salaries up, to adjust, okay? What are the parameters? In some cases, I'm coming back to you, say, look, at graduation credits are different, this is how they handle this different. Doesn't mean we have to do it, but I have an obligation to come to you as a board because that was your expectation to say, what is different? And I've showed you what is different, all right? I've heard the conversation several times, well, we've never looked at test scores. You're absolutely right. I guess I'm gonna be that, but that's the game we have to play with the state of Wyoming, and those are the scores we're gonna look at, and those are the PLCs, and that's why they're successful. Are our kids better in the vocational field? Do we have better tracks? Absolutely, don't disagree with anything, and it doesn't cut down anything we're doing with staff. But I do have to come back and say, the last 3 years, every time somebody comes in and says, you're not doing it according to state rules, I've been the guy behind the scenes that have made sure that you as a board and this as a district have stayed afloat, because there's been several of those things. And I'm not gonna go into that point, but we cleaned up a lot of things. We cleaned up what we're doing in Power School, we're cleaning up what we're doing with our evaluation systems weren't approved, whether you like it or not, or we can argue it, it wasn't approved. We got a new evaluation system, we built foundations, we came back, we did contracts. All of that stuff is, I finally feel the concrete is above the ground and we're starting to build a foundation. If we want to be average, let's be average. I'm not the guy then, to be honest with you. If you want to be average, then we need to find. But I don't think there's a teacher or a school in this district that wants to be average. Mm-hmm. Okay? I know that for a fact. Because when that guy over there starts presenting data, which he will present you the data, all right, and we start looking at students, we start looking at, but when you challenge me to come in and say, what are high-performing districts doing and what is similar, that's what we have in front of you here today. The challenge is looking at what parameters do they guide and be able to make changes. The other part that's very clear is 20 years ago, we could easily say we're the best show in town because we were the only show in town. And if you don't look down the road says that education is changing, kids are gonna have different, not just kids, let's talk about parents. Parents have different options, okay? And again, I gotta come back to that first chapter. That's the reality. Those key things are where we're at. We are already there as a district. But we don't, and I'm proud of everything that we've done. You know that as well as I do. Every building serves a purpose. Every department serves a purpose. I mean, let's talk about our ops team. They felt, what's the third thing I had to do when I came in? I had to meet with all the classified staff that were not very friendly because their salary schedules and where they were. I mean, if you thought that was friendly, it wasn't friendly. But we've worked through that to where now they're competitive, the environments are changing. So you gotta remember, as a superintendent, my job is to look at the entire district. And what I'm presenting to you here today is we have to take this challenge on together as an entire district. There, when we say there's $30 million worth of wishes out there's $30 million worth of wishes, but there's not $30 million worth of money. Right. And if you read the latest report in the Buffalo Bulletin, which thank you for reporting that from the State Facilities Commission, legislators are already starting to question whether they're gonna give us money for major maintenance. Which scares the heck out of me, because we got $4.5 million in that pipe hole that we need to make sure we get through to get through to KC. Mm-hmm. So if legislators are already starting to question simply major maintenance, you gotta look beyond that as a superintendent and say, what are they gonna start questioning about public education, which is a billion-dollar budget, multi-billion dollar budget, as far as where we're headed, all right? You know, I learned a great lesson one time. Leading the small school districts in the state of Wyoming, former Senator Kinsky said, hey, Charles, you should reach out to this national organization about small school districts and maybe they can help you with some of the challenges you have. Sure, I'll do that. So you proactively get on, you get after it with Jay and you're starting talking. I finally get somebody to call me back and say, hey, we're from Wyoming. Our senators feel that we should talk to you so we can talk about how do you fund small school districts. And I said, well, what are your average small school districts? Oh, we're between 100 and 250 kids. And silence went on the phone. They go, we can't help you. I said, what do you mean? You're in Wyoming. You're telling me you have school districts that are size of 100 to 250 kids. I said, absolutely. And our local senator wants to know what are some of the key things. He says, nationwide, a small school district is considered to be 5,000 students, and exceptionally small school districts are considered to be 2,000 students. So the reality, Wyoming is different than the national average when you see trends. I mean, you look at districts that are have 120 to 130,000 students, that's more than the entire state of Wyoming. So we are unique. When I come to you and I present to you, I'm okay with whatever direction that we decide to go as a board, because that's my job. And I feel I've done my job up to this point doing everything that you've asked to do. But it doesn't take away the points that I put out. We all, not just any one building, we all are going to have to make choices. Okay? That's the point. Our kids, our community, our parents, I as a superintendent, you as a board of trustees, these times are different. And if you looked at the data, 20 years later, we're probably kind of that same plateau that we were in 2005 with the number of students. All right? But we have, financially, the cost to do business has gone up. So I'm going to do whatever you want me to do. I'm grateful for where I have and what I'm presenting. I'm confident in what I presented to you because you asked me to present to you what is different. And if that's a direction we go, the work then begins. That means bringing everybody to the table, talking about graduation credits, talking about early graduation. It's just a matter. It doesn't have to necessarily change, but we need to revisit it and make sure it's consistent, because what I can't have as a superintendent is inconsistency. And I can't have the target continue to change year to year. If that's one thing those high-performing districts showed to you guys and showed to me, is they've been doing the same thing for a long time, but they have a system in place that when things change, they have the ability to flex. Okay, and that's what we're kind of looking at here. How can we put systems in place in Johnson County School District number one, the Johnson County School District number one, so when challenges do arise, we're not limited by the policies that we control and then have to go through a process again, all right? So it is about some things. It is about PLCs. It is about looking at student data, all data, not just one section. And, those of you that have been with me, what have I preached? Every year I'd like to do a what?
Data retreat,
all right? Because I want you to see where our kids are and what the celebrations are and where we can end it, because that's what a PLC is. A PLC is really looking at where our kids are and how do we grow them and then be able. And I can tell you as a superintendent, you don't sometimes get a seat at the table when you're making state-level educational choices unless the report card shows you are what?
High-performing districts.
So again, it's not about saying we're doing amazing things, but there are some things that we can tweak with our picture to get that point across. And what is our communication plan about? Our communication plan is singing our songs so the community and the state knows all the great things we're doing, right?
We can tell our own story.
Right? And that's the journey we're on. I appreciate everything that you've supported me with over the last 2 to 3 years on this journey, because we've established a foundation. There is no doubt. But now we've come to the point where now here's the data. Here's it shows the difference between those high-performing districts. We're already doing some of it. The staffing initiative is already in place. All right? And we're starting to make some definite changes with where we're at. But the challenges are not over. All right? I just got to be honest with you. The challenges are not over. Now, when I say challenges, it doesn't mean that it's doom and gloom. That means we're going to have to come together. We're going to have to figure out. There's going to have to be choices that are made. But it doesn't mean that when we're